This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
This is Tom Gross of Star Wars in the Classroom, and you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens.
On today's show, we will be discussing Path of the Jedi, the 8th episode in Season 1.
Joining us today on Rebels Reactions is Tom Gross of Star Wars in the Classroom. Tom is a lifelong Star Wars fan, passionate educator, and a good friend. We are honored to have him join us for a cup of coffee. Welcome, Tom.
Oh, thanks a lot. Hey, and I'm honored to be here. Really, this is great.
It's super cool. And full disclosure to everyone, Tom and I are friends. We work together at the same high school. He is the librarian there, and the students absolutely love him. And before he even started, the previous librarian said to me, I just met Tom, and you guys are going to hit it off. And what do you know? It has certainly come to pass. So we're excited to have you on. And in fact, usually whenever Rebels comes out, of course, I text Corey incessantly. but I also talked to Tom about what happened. And for this one, there have been a number of times we were about to talk, and we said, no, let's not do it. Let's save it for Rebels Reactions. And gentlemen, we'll dive into it. And Tom, since you're our special guest, give us your overall opinion on Path of the Jedi.
Well, there's so much, and it's funny. I've watched it several times since the first episode, and I have to say that the first time I watched it, I sat down, and of course, so many times with Star Wars and Clone Wars, and I wish they were on the big screen. I mean, really, because that's how we've originally experienced Star Wars. But so I'm watching on my iPad, and I just and it was kind of like, and I don't know if it was the day or what it was, but I was kind of like, man, this is getting started off slow. But every time I've watched it since, I'm so disappointed in my first reaction because there's so much in this one, and some highlights for me were, the going into the cave, idea, where he takes him to, Kanan takes him to the old Jedi temple and sends him off on his own. That was I just like flashbacks to Empire. Strikes Back, where Yoda sends Luke into the cave, and then first impression was just how cool and the goosebumps that came on when Yoda's voice shows up, comes on, and you're just like, whoa, Yoda's talking to Ezra, and then when he's having like this dual dialogue between Ezra and then Kanan, and you're just like, wow, here's Yoda, just. He's leading the way here, and that was so cool. And then, of course, the kyber crystal and the laser sword, the lightsaber at the end.
Agree. Oh yeah, this is a fun episode. And Corey, what about you? What are your overall opinions on Path of the Jedi?
Yeah, my first take. I was excited for the series to come back. Just coming off of little break we had, and I was kind of on a down note a little bit from the last episode. Ezra kind of realized some things. And, going to this one, it really jumped right out, on the get-go there, what the kind of the whole idea was going to be about them continuing the training and everything. And, I put it this way, I got thinking about it and kind of compare it to the episode that we just left on with Ezra, kind of in that seat looking out at the stars.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, man, this combined with this episode is like Empire backwards a little bit.
Oh wow!
It's like he's gone through his trial and his test. It's weird. It's a weird kind of chop up, but I definitely had that. Empire feel. You know, obviously the, you know, they find the Jedi Temple and they've just learned a lot about the Jedi way and what kind of has come to pass so far. And I kind of realized that maybe Kanan is him too. He's realizing some things and maybe he knows a lot more than we think he knows. And he's becoming a great teacher, I think. He's learning along the way. Yes. So he's learning a lot too. So it's not just Ezra's journey. I also think it's Kanan's as well.
Wow. Look at this, man. You, Corey, you've been like, woo.
I love the series. It's great.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's a good one. It's both of you are going to be hard to follow. Basically, what I'll say is this. I loved it, and I had a similar reaction to Thomas. When I first watched it, I liked it, and it was weird. We had talked about this in a previous show, but since we had recently interviewed Tom Kane, I was excited that Frank Oz was coming back, because how could you not be? He's a living legend. But part of me was like, I like Tom Kane's Yoda. And so I watched it, and I really liked it, and a lot of stuff was going on when I was watching it the first time. So I watched it again. Typically what I do when I watch these shows, especially since we have our show now, is I watch it the first time and just watch it. And whatever comes to mind comes to mind. And then the second time I watch it, I have my iPad on the right and my MacBook on the left, or doesn't, you know, either way. And I will pause it, every 30 seconds. And I'll just type stuff. And I'll just type notes and things. Pretend like I'm in a class. And just try to notice themes and patterns. And the metaphors in this episode and the power of what's being discussed and the implications it has far-reaching on the Star Wars universe, it's tremendous. I mean, it's not going to be a stretch to guess what my grade is going to be at the end of this little discussion, but I thought it was great. So, gentlemen, Ezra is supposed to be training. He's late to training. You know, he's a kid. That happens. And Kanan is a little upset with him, and he says, listen, you made a dangerous connection to the Force. We need to test you. We need to test you to see if you are truly meant to be a Jedi. And then something cool happens. The logo for Rebels pops up, and it's not that usual, you know, worst impression of the logo ever. Sorry, everyone. But it's the song from A New Hope. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about that?
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit of a change, because I feel the series maturing in itself, you know, as the kind
like
of started
Ezra.
Out, very much so. And I love this growth that we've seen, even just in these few episodes of the first season. There's so much going on here. You know, it's just dynamic, and I have a feeling that even you talked about, you know, I'm sure we'll get to the voice of Yoda, you know, it's just a whole different feeling. I think, you know, my little two cents here for about Frank Oz doing it. This was the Yoda for this series. You know, and they needed to have somebody just a little bit different. Although I love Tom Kane as well. You know, they need something just to set apart a little bit. You know, and this isn't the same Yoda we see maybe in Clone Wars. It's a different arc of some sort or something. But, you know, in this fourth brief, you know, brief introduction we get, you know, he kind of gets in trouble for being late and stuff. But, you know, it's almost like I felt like they've got a great connection so far, Kanan and Ezra. And Kanan himself was worried. He's like, you know, he's on edge now. Now that he's seen this big power boost and this big momentum shift a little bit in Ezra, I think he's a little bit unsure.
Tom, what about you?
Yeah, that's boy. You know, Dan, I didn't even really consider that intro when they bring up the Rebels. You know, the Rebels logo, and usually it's the music you so well described there. I hadn't even noticed the change, but you know what? Inside though, I did notice that, and you know. That opening, I think, is really cool, and the description, Corey, that you gave of, you know, like Kanan kind of frustrated and looking for him and whatnot. When they cut to the prairie and you see Ezra running, like sprinting through, what I saw there was little kid. You know, here's the little kid. And when you take the beginning, and I don't want to jump too far into the conversation yet, but when you take the beginning of the episode and the end of the episode where he's holding his own saber, it's like, wow, look at the shift there. And so that's really, I hadn't really thought of that music change.
Well, and the music is, you know, the Twin Suns Force theme mix, and it's gorgeous. I think the thing that impresses me the most about this particular scene is that there's frustration, but it goes away. I mean, you know, we know, we're all parents. We know how it is when you're dealing with kids. They can frustrate you, but you love them and you care about them. And you can sense that bond between them. And I think as impressive to me, if not more so, is the way that Ezra responds to the very brief scolding, you know, and he says, look, I want to be a Jedi. I want to be the Jedi that you see in me, which I think is a strong show the paternal relationship that they have, but also the how powerful the idea of the Jedi Master Padawan is. This mentor-mentee relationship is huge. Ezra even says, look, I'm not used to the rules. You knew how I grew up, but he doesn't use it as an excuse. He's very brave, and we've seen this throughout the series so far. And I love that. I also think it's really cool that when he leaves, Keaton says, I will help him if I can. And it wasn't like a woe is me, I don't feel good about myself. He's just being honest. Look, if I can help him, I will try. There's a little doubt, but it's just honest. And Hera says, I know you can. Hera, again, being the backbone of the ghost. And I find that really encouraging.
Yeah.
So then we go to the temple, and there's the test, of course. And overall, the test is basically this. Look, there are Jedi temples throughout the stars. They're little small outposts, and the Force guides you to them. So you got to figure out where it is. And I thought it was pretty cool, especially when Kanan says, look, only a connection to the Force can lead you to the temple. And then Ezra meditates in the Force, and he says, look, I can't give you the coordinates, but I know how to get there. And then we jump to Ezra has to figure out how to get inside. Couldn't realize they have to go in together. And then, you know, don't look, listen. There's like four or five things here. I'm going to repeat them again because I feel like there are a lot of metaphors in this, guys. So let's look at them again. Only connection to the Force can lead you to the temple. And he says, I can't give you the coordinates, but I know how to get there. And Ezra, of course, has to be the one to figure out how to get inside. Then they realize they must go in together and they have to listen. What do you think, guys?
Wow, you went deep on that one. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, those, I think so many times, I mean, I was just kind of looking through some of my notes when you were talking there about that. And you know, earlier before they left, you know, Kanan says, you need discipline, you need focus. I mean, how many times do you hear that throughout? And even Yoda says it to Kanan later on. You know, you need discipline, you need focus, you need patience. And so, so this whole listening. I love that. And don't have the coordinates. And so I you know, I wondered, I don't know. When they were flying and he closes his eyes and Ezra's saying, I see a large stone, or I can't remember what he says. You know, there's a part of me that thought, does Kanan already know this? As he, you know, as we knew, because he put the autopilot on. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm kind of, yeah, well, that's a tough one.
It is. I didn't even think about it until the second time. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, as far as metaphors, maybe I don't catch what you're saying, but Tom, you made some good points. You know, to me, when I kind of had that scene encompassing, you know, him trying to use the Force to find this temple, and then revealing he had it on autopilot, I thought, well, that's kind of a blow to Ezra's character, and yes, he kind of saw it in his mind and stuff, but like.
I must have missed this autopilot thing.
Yeah, that was it. Was he kind of revealed that once Ezra kind of plotted out what he'd seen,
mountain
structure or something like that, and then he says, "Oh, good."
He said he used the holocron, to discover it and all that. Yeah,
but it's not like he's known ever since they went to Lothal. He just figured out that afternoon. So it's not like he was keeping a big secret.
Well, that's. I mean, that we can discuss that, but I mean, I think that's the bigger question here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this the reason that they're on Lothal in the first place? And as there was just a happenstance.
Well, Randy Hutchinson sent us an email about this. Yeah. And he says, good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a plot question on the latest episode of Rebels. And if you haven't seen it yet, please wait to read this email until after you've seen it. See, he appreciates our spoiler policy. Thank you. Thank you, Randy.
Yes, Randy. Thank you.
So in your opinion, is the Jedi Temple the reason that the crew of the Ghost is on Lothal, or is it just a happy coincidence to make it work for the most recent episode? I like to think that the crew of the Ghost has a variety of planets they could work to help, but that Hera and Kanan settled on Lothal due to the proximity of the planet, and that's why Kanan already knew there was a temple on the planet. Or maybe Jedi temples in the galaxy are a dime a dozen, like a Knights of Columbus Hall, where you can find them anywhere you go. Interested to hear your thoughts. Keep up your good work, as always. Well, thank you, Randy. And he and I actually sort of saw this the other way, emailed back and forth. But to me, Kanan says, look, I just found it out on the holocron. I wanted to see if you could find it. But when we came to Lothal, I didn't know it was there. So I think this is just the Force. This is the connection of the Force. This is the Force, a lot of the time, is really about destiny, which is very much the hero's journey. When I looked at the temple and these things like you know, I can't give you the coordinates, but I can tell you how to, I know how to get there. That's almost like a child. To me, this whole thing is adolescence. This whole thing is about going in as a kid and coming out a man. Now, he's not a man physically, but metaphorically speaking, and with the Force, he certainly has become a much older, wiser individual. And, you know, you have to listen. Don't look around. Listen to your heart. Listen to your conscience. You have to be the one to figure out how to get inside. Look, I can give you the map. It's like, you know, you tell a kid, look, I can help you try to get your diploma. I can help you to be more responsible. But at some point, you have to make these choices yourself. How do you get inside? And ultimately, what does Ezra realize? They have to do it together. He has to do it with his mentors. He goes in with his mentor because that's the learning. That's the Padawan-master relationship. But then once he's inside, adolescence comes in. It's like college. It's like Jedi college in a very quick thing with more lightsabers and more death.
Skeletons. Yeah.
And, it's really powerful. Then we get to the design of the outside of the temple, and I see a lot of here. I see there's rocks, there's snow, there's water, clouds, ton of symbols here. To me, the rocks is like nature in a natural way. There are those interesting symbols when we see the aerial view from the top of the rock that I'm not sure what they mean. I'm sure there are people out there far more intelligent than I am and well-versed in the symbiology of the Force and Star Wars that would know what they mean. But to me, when I see snow and water mixed, of course, water is the great symbol for baptism and change. We see great change going in and out, and he has to go through water to do it. But some of the water is frozen, which shows me that there is some possibility there that there's still much more growth that has to come. So I love the symbolism in this one.
Yeah, I mean, you took it a lot further than I did. But I'll tell you this: when the temple started opening, you know, it has that like twisting, lifting sort of movement. And I don't mean to throw in another, you know, epic trilogy here, but like a Lord of the Rings kind of feel. Came with me there. But what that leads me to is I had this thought that wow, this is like ancient. You know, when we're coming off of the Clone Wars, where a lot of things were on Coruscant, and the Jedi Temple was modern, and even the holocron has that modern kind of feel with the hologram and all that. And but you have to remember that the Force is not something modern. It's not a new. It's something ancient. And so, you know, and it's an ancient earthy kind of thing. And so I was with you with the and all that. I was trying to figure out if it was prairie or what, and I my mind kind of went back to Tatooine at that point, but then realized the prairie cats and whatnot, and so yeah, I noticed all of that, but this kind of makes it your comment makes it a lot clearer.
Good, that's awesome. Yeah, it's so neat to look at these things through different people's points of view and multiple viewings. It's pretty exciting, really good stuff. Corey, anything else about that, or should we move on?
Yeah, I had a quick thought. I mean, you guys alluded to Lord of the Rings. I thought of Indiana Jones instantly.
Yeah,
with the skeletons.
Especially Last Crusade, maybe. At the end,
just kind of a general feel of the dusty and the dirty and the, you know, the ancientness of it. Maybe Last Crusade at the end there.
Sure.
With the kind of the movement of the pillars and the design of it, kind of the he walks through the
even
three,
like Crystal Skull, really.
I guess you could say that. I mean, Ed would love that, but
yes,
sure,
he would.
It definitely had that feel to it. So obviously, they're mixing that in, kind of playing with that a little bit. I think the Ezra went on that journey of you know, finding himself in a sense that you made a connection to, Dan, becoming a man. I like that a lot.
Well, and even to extend the metaphor even further, at the end, you know, Kanan says, don't lose focus. I don't want this thing crashing down on us, which, you know, again, don't lose your focus on who you're trying to become, because life can hit you like crazy and things can fall apart rapidly. I found it interesting, and I rewound this part just to hear what pronoun to use. He didn't say, we don't want this thing crashing down on us. I don't want this thing crashing down on us. I find that interesting that even in this, Kanan still kind of goes a little bit back and forth, even though he may not realize it, about who the test really is for. Because it really is for both of them, even though it's ultimately Ezra's and it's more about him. But there's a small part that Kanan has to play here, which I found fascinating.
I was going to say also, I mean, you know, seeing the skeletons and stuff, maybe he had realized that, you know, this was his test as well, to wait for Ezra to come out and whatever that may be. I mean, looking at the skeletons thinking, oh, this could be me. You know, and that's something he hasn't dealt with yet. So it's hard to
let go of your
kids. Definitely. Yeah, there you go. I like that too. Yeah.
So we're going to start the test. And Ezric shows complete faith in Kanan, absolutely complete faith, not blind faith, just sincere respect. And he looks at Kanan and he says, "What am I looking for?" And Kanan says, "You're looking for nothing and everything." And Ezra's like, "Well, that doesn't help." And Kanan says, "I know." I thought that was so incredibly honest. The relationship between parent and student or teacher and or parent, yeah, parent and child or teacher and student is a very unique, complicated relationship. But that's an honesty that you don't often see. And I think that that shows just what kind of relationship they have.
I agree. And I have to say, you left off the very last line before the door shuts. And that's what he says. He says, Kanan says, "That's what my master told me."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the second time that I can remember. Now, there might have been another one, but that's the second time he said that. And it just – it makes me want –
Well, twice in that in this episode even when they're on the ship on the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. So it just – so and we started bringing this up a little bit earlier, and that was – that so much of this story is about Ezra, but I feel like it's mirrored by Kanan as well. And so many times where I'm hoping for Ezra, but really who I'm hoping for is Kanan, because Ezra is so dependent upon him.
That's a great comment.
Do you think he's dependent on him? I think that's what this whole episode is about, isn't it? Him learning to remove himself from attachments.
Well, he's making the point that not only is this for Ezra's, you know, benefit, but it's also for his own benefit is the trial. I mean,
no question.
I think they're both going through this trial at the same time, and they're both unknowing what's going to happen next. You know, this is how my master did to me. Good luck. You know, I'm just gonna. He sat here like me, like this, and waited, and that's what I have to do now. I have to force myself to do that. So it's fascinating to think about that, and you know, just kudos to the team there. The Rebels team, the scripting and everything is just still so fluid, and the characters are so vivid, and their conversations, and the voice actors are so dead on too. So,
they nail it, and I think, you know, what's cool is, and why I think I was so excited to hear Yoda come on, and I'm sure that's where we're headed soon, but because it's Yoda not just helping Ezra, but Yoda helping Kanan as well. And I think this is going to be so cool now to watch both of them, to continue watching both of them grow together.
Very much so. And then you mentioned Yoda. We're going to get to Yoda, but there's one more point I want to discuss before we get to him. And this whole little subsection here is all about fear. The test starts. Kanan shows up. Oh, I changed my mind. Of course, we know that isn't really Kanan. This was sort of a force. I don't know how that's been described, but it's not really Kanan. It's like a vision. So Kanan fights the Inquisitor, and notice every time, of course, they show the Inquisitor, the red light is on him, and then he kills Kanan rather flamboyantly. Honestly, the way he flashes it around is very ostentatious in his dueling prowess. Kills him, throws his body into an apparent dead end, like a pit. You know, there's complete darkness. It's death, right? And Ezra gets mad and he says, "I'll make you pay. I swear I'll make you pay." And then he gets Kanan's lightsaber, and I think this is really powerful, and he becomes like impotent. It's not powerful. It doesn't work. He can't find his inner strength through Kanan. He has to find it through himself, which we see later towards the end of the episode, of course.
Right. That's a good point, Dan. I mean, you know, he's trying to use outside sources to achieve his goals, and he's not looking within himself to find that. I didn't realize it until you said that, and I thought, well, that's a great relationship there. You know, as this process going through these steps in this trial, and at this point, you know, we all kind of know, like, yes, this is his quote unquote tree moment. You know, it seems like Luke had to learn something before he moved on, and so does Ezra at this point.
Yeah, and you know, when I think about that battle between Kanan and, well, Ezra put it, an illusion. You know, he felt like this was all an illusion. That battle between the two of them, I felt like was almost his perception of the two of them, because I thought that in the battle Kanan was real kind of sloppy and struggled and made huge wide lightsaber swings, whereas mm-hmm. And you explained it or described it perfectly that the Inquisitor was flamboyant, mm-hmm. and I didn't go back and look at other episodes to see the previous battles between the two of them, but it was different. And I thought, this is really how this whole thing is Ezra's perception mm-hmm. of how it all goes, and then as you Corey, you mentioned the how you know now he has to do it on his own, and Kanan's lightsaber doesn't work, and no one else is there, and there's a big pit where Kanan just fell, and so how's he going to deal with this now?
And real quick, are there three times in this episode where Ezra falls into a pit? Is it three times, or is it twice?
I think it's twice.
I counted two. Yeah, I counted two.
Okay, I think that's probably right. Numbers usually are significant. I was hoping to go through my theory of three, but I'll have to save that for another time. then he appears on the ghost. He falls into the same pit as Kanan, and then he wakes up on the ghost, and all of his fears are realized. It's pretty much the worst things maybe your deepest, darkest insecurities mm-hmm. will tell you. Zeb doesn't really care. Hera appears to be using him for his talents. Sabine feels sorry for him and pities him, which is the last thing you want for someone you have a crush on. And then they're all murdered by the Inquisitor. And then he's knocked into nothingness, and he falls down and he says, "I'm alone, abandoned again." And then we have his new hope. And I love this. He stands up and he says, "I can survive this. I've done it before." He brings that hope into the picture. And he does something that a lot of adults in real life can't do. They can't face their fears and realize, hey, I've been through this before. I can master it. I can master my fear. Because, of course, we know the thing about being a hero is not that you don't have fear. It's that you're able to try to conquer your fear and not let it conquer you. He learns that quite beautifully with very, very vivid images that would be hard to shake.
Yeah. I got to take a step back, though, Dan. You mentioned the Inquisitor kills the rest of the shipmates on the ghost there, and in that point, I thought I was really shocked that they don't show it on screen, but it's a shadowed moment. But yeah, I was a little shocked at the violence.
It's cold blooded.
It's a cold blooded. It shows me that you guys had said that this is what Ezra believes will happen, or his fear is.
Yeah, his big fears.
And man, what a vivid thought to have as a young man, and it, man, this is just through our discussion here, it made me think, want to go back and watch that again and just see it with that fresh eye.
That makes you wonder what he's been exposed to.
Well, that exactly. I was thinking now, what is he seeing? What is he risen above? Like he mentions before, he's had to rise. He's been abandoned, and he has to do it again. He can survive this. What else did he have to survive? It's fascinating, and that such young age, it's almost kind of sad.
Yeah, that I thought that scene was really powerful as well, and even though they cloaked it and they put it in shadow and behind a closed door, I mean, they had the screams and the shouting, and I just it was really a dark moment. Mm-hmm. And
it's even more visual or visceral than Revenge of the Sith in some ways.
Are the young ones? Absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think yeah. So, guys, would you show this scene, this episode, to your kids?
Man, that's a good question. When it came up, I was kind of shocked. But, as we do see at the end, we do see that it is, at this point, we know it's his imagination going on. But I think I would, because it opens a door to communicate with my kids about maybe their fears.
All of the kids, or does it depend on the ages?
Right now, my older kids are watching him. Older boys are watching it, and our third son is he does watch it here and there, but he doesn't pick up on a whole lot of stuff. So I don't think he might watch it, but it wouldn't bother me if he watched it, because they do it tastefully. It's tastefully done, but also it does, like I said, I think it opens that line of communication. So they're just say, hey, what really happened here? What's his, I can relate it to his fears and what he thinks, and open the door to possibly their own fears. So good stuff.
Yeah, my daughter has we watched it together and she was she's 7, and we talked a lot about how this was Ezra's imagination, and we rewound it and we tried to figure out when does it become his imagination and what he thinks, and we did talk a little bit about these are things that he's afraid of, and you know, I don't know that it hit her. That, I mean, we've watched several episodes of Clone Wars that I that were kind of brutal and surprising, and not negatively for, on my side, but kind of surprising watching it with my 7-year-old. And we had conversations, and it was fine, but yeah. I guess my bottom line is, yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch it with her.
That's neat. I love that this provides opportunity to talk about some bigger issues with your kids. I think that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. So the Inquisitor comes back at the end, the final test, really, and talking his usual. I can't remember how Justin Bolger described it when the Sith are taunting. It was awesome. But Ezra says, "There's always a way out if I follow my training." He says, "Yeah, I'm afraid of being alone. I'm afraid of losing my master for sure, but I'm not going to let it control myself." And then in a scene reminiscent of the end of season 6 of the Clone Wars with Yoda, he allows himself to be struck down. And of course, because the Inquisitor isn't real, nothing happens to him. He conquers his fear. And that leads to something amazing, mm-hmm. The return of Yoda.
Yeah, and it begs the question, Dan and Tom here. You know, we see Obi-Wan get struck down in that same fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
And we see Yoda discovering
that's good.
Discovering that in season 6 of that beyond. You know, and Qui-Gon Jinn even kind of steps in that arena too. You know, is this something that shows Ezra's power blossoming to a full extent of some sort, that his ability to reach into... You know, that far reaches into the afterworld, or you know, becoming one with the Force. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in this context, Yoda has not passed on, but maybe Yoda has learned the knowledge to, you know,
which we saw him do.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's interesting too, because what you have here is a dichotomy of. Where is power? Who has the power? Do you have the power? Does it come from without, or does it come from within? He learns that he has power within himself. He has to have some faith in something more powerful than himself, but he learns to let go of his fear and let go of your conscious self and act on instinct, right? That's what Obi-Wan tells Luke mm-hmm. on the Bridge of the Falcon. What do you think, Tom?
To be honest with you, you guys have kind of blown me away here, because all the comparisons I've made to with Ezra are always to Luke, and in some ways Ahsoka, and I haven't thought Ezra to some of the Jedi Masters that you've been mentioning, like Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan, of being struck down. So wow, yeah. I mean, clearly he faces his fear and boom, defeats it. Hadn't made those connections. Speaking of, and I don't mean to switch subjects on you.
No, go ahead.
But something that has really kind of been sitting with me in the context of comparing Ezra to some other characters. Did either one of you think about Luke Skywalker falling off of whatever that apparatus was in Cloud City after mm-hmm. he learns it's his father and even in the second time he falls off of Ezra, that is, falls, and he's into the darkness, I even hear some of the wind that I thought I heard during when he falls at Cloud City.
Nice.
And I'm just like, I just thought, okay, so what just happened here? Because Luke learns that, you know, Darth Vader's his father, which, you know, is not really comparable anywhere, but that's a truth he has to face.
Yes.
And so here, Ezra has to learn, I just lost Kanan. I just lost the crew. I lost all my friends. And boom, here's a truth you have to face. And he falls into this darkness, the wind blowing through the tunnel. And now what's going to happen? You know, Luke is rescued by his friends. Mm-hmm. But Ezra doesn't have that.
That's fantastic.
I don't know. I just thought that was I couldn't let that go.
No, you shouldn't. That's why these discussions are so cool, because you just said a couple of things in quoted too that I hadn't connected dots on either. It's also pretty neat metaphorically, of course, that a number of times he falls through darkness and comes to light. But it isn't really until Yoda shows up that we see true light. And so we have to talk about Yoda. Before we talk about what he says, let's talk about the performance of Frank Oz. And what was that like for you guys?
Well, I just listened to your interview with Tom Kane, and and was, I mean, just completely and utterly sold on him as as Yoda.
Right.
And I'm working through the Clone Wars as well. So I knew something was different, and I didn't know, Dan, until we had talked, that was Frank Oz doing it. And I thought it was a little different from what I was used to in working through the Clone Wars. And there were some things in there, some of his interpretation. I wish I could remember the line exactly, but he really hung on to some sounds, and they were I'm really frustrated that I can't think of the two words, but they start with M, and he goes mmm, and he really hung on to them, and I said that's a Yoda I haven't heard in a while.
I know what you're saying.
Well, you know, my opinion here, you know, it's like I said before, Tom Kane's a great voice actor. Frank Oz obviously is a legend, and you make some good comparisons, Tom. You know, I looked back to season 6, going back to that too, kind of Yoda's dark moment there, where he had to fight the dark version of himself, and even Tom kind of related this too a little bit of the, it was the Smeagol and the Lord of the Rings style of kind of portraying that dark Yoda, and his voice was kind of that, you know, that gravelly feel to it. I wonder, you know, is that something that was, you know, a takeaway from that, was that, does that damage Yoda in a sense? So now he has this variation in his voice that, you know, is him fighting off that dark side, or relating that to, you know, Frank Oz's performance, just that step further in Yoda's arc, as it was, you know, as he continues to, you know, just try to learn himself or learn the Force. I mean, I want to say that's the reason they had Frank Oz, was to kind of give that older version of Yoda, that he's been through some troubled times and been seeking himself. So, right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of how I look at it.
And also, it's pretty interesting that, I mean, this connects Rebels to the films. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yes.
In a way that Clone Wars didn't, because it has Frank Oz in it. It's very similar to James Earl Jones coming back as Darth Vader, or who knows, maybe Billy Dee Williams will come back as Lando Calrissian. So I think that's pretty neat. I think there's power there. There is it's a discernible difference in the voice, but it's not. I think you'd have to know, like Tom said, before you really knew. And it's safe to say that the events of Revenge of the Sith and being isolated on Dagobah for a while will change you physically. You know, he's more enlightened, but he's also older. So I think it's just fascinating. And speaking of that, Yoda shows up. As soon as Ezra faces his fears, the Force is different, guys. The Force is different. Ezra says that he's ready. And this door opens up. We've seen these doors open up a few times in this episode. But this time, Ezra literally walks into light. He literally walks into the light. And then Kanan shows up too. He's learning lessons from Yoda as well. And he says, how's this happening? And Yoda does famous things like, be not concerned with how. And I think the most interesting thing about Kanan's conversation with Yoda, which isn't as detailed as Ezra's, is Yoda says that he can see Kanan now, when before he couldn't. Because of what happened in the cave, now Yoda can see Kanan and Ezra, when before he couldn't. So I'm going to ask you guys, who did this depend on? Why is this seismic shift in the Force? Was it because of something Ezra did? Or was it something that Kanan did?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to say it's something of a combination of the two. Maybe.
Or was it something that Yoda did?
I don't know.
I don't think it could be Yoda, because Yoda was just a bystander. What do you think, Tom?
Well, just without thinking about it too deeply, I'm going to go with, I think it's something that Kanan did. I think finding, well, about what I'm here to say might change my mind. I think in finding Ezra, it really lit the fire in Kanan. And, you know, Kanan has brought him along this far, and Kanan led him to the temple, and even Kanan helped him to open it up. And I just, you know, there's a part of me that wonders when Ezra says, we both, when they're standing outside trying to figure out how to get in, Ezra says, I need to listen, or I need to do this. And then he says, no, we need to do this. I wonder if that's when, you know, perhaps we could say that that's when the awareness came, because it took both of them to open the Jedi Temple, and maybe that's when Yoda's awareness of Kanan, there are two of them. And it does make me, you referenced Kanan's conversation with Yoda being a little bit more vague or not as detailed, and it just makes me want to know more and more and more, because one thing that really stood out to me in that conversation was Kanan says to Yoda, "I won't let him lose his way." Pause. Like I did.
Yeah.
I want to know more about this. And earlier he refers to his master as a she, and I don't know, maybe from some other sources we know who that master is.
A New Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I need to get on that. But so I want to know that. So those who haven't read that will need to join me in reading that. I want to know, you know, what happened to Kanan?
Mm-hmm. Which we'll find out in April through Greg Weisman's new comic book series.
That's right. Oh boy,
that's going to be cool. And since he helped create Kanan anyway through the series, I mean, who better to write that, right? So Tom, we'll have to have you back on when we look at that comic book.
That'll be awesome.
That would be fun. So, Corey, do you think it's a combination of the two?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two, because all along we've been talking about this is both their journey. They both open the entrance to the temple, and they're both going through these feelings. Yoda's talking to both of them. The whole episode is centered on both of them. They're both their growth as Jedis. And back to what you talked about, him going to the light, I can't help but go back to A New Hope when they talk about the light side and the dark side. Obi-Wan.
Sure.
You know, before that, wasn't really necessarily Jedi and Sith. It was light side, dark side. And, you know, obviously, is this him coming into the light side and choosing that light side? I'd like to think so.
Literally, it's like enlightenment. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, that's good. That's what I wanted to say about that. So,
well, and so then a few interesting things happen. Well, a lot of interesting things happen. We're talking about Yoda, but I love when Ezra says "which way," and Yoda says "which way is the right way is the wrong question. You have to decide your path." Basically, comes down to you decide your path. Not your master. And then Ezra starts thinking again, and he says, and Yoda says, "Do you sense or you feel?" And he asks Kanan that when asking Kanan what he believes about Ezra's power and what Ezra can do. Anything jump out for that for you guys? Which way is the right way is the wrong question?
Some more Yoda-isms,
cool.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some more decisive, his way of thinking is backwards, but yet it's forwards. You know, it's almost like, you know, like you said, which way is the right way is the wrong question. And it's just,
but he's certainly not saying, don't think about right and wrong, or is he? I think it's about, what do you think it's about, Tom? I'll say what I think, but what do you think, Tom?
I don't know. I think it's a point when it's a time when Kanan would say, we might repeat that and say, "I don't know what that means. It's just what my master told me."
Yeah, there you go. Right. That's good.
But that's where we see the space cowboy. Yeah.
But the thing that really resonated with me on that is Ezra makes some sort of a comment about, well, my master didn't tell me that. And Yoda says, "Oh, you do everything that your master says?"
Yeah, right.
And which leads to that, you know, you choose your own path.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's what I get out of that conversation right there.
It's like Yoda saying, if Kanan jumps off a bridge, are you going to jump off a bridge?
Exactly, right.
As far as which way is the right way is the wrong question, you decide your path. It's almost like, look, if you're a good person, trust in who you are and embrace who you are, and you'll make the right choice. It's almost like, really, if you look at it that way, then this is purely your nature, not how you're nurtured. Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, even, you know,
it's kind of a bad way to look at it, though. If it's purely your nature, it doesn't matter how you're raised. It's just sort of like, well, this is who you are. This is the kind of choices you're going to make. It's almost like he's probably saying both.
Well, even at this point, Ezra's learned so much to look within himself, to make choices, rather than just ask for, you know, direction.
Right.
So I think at this point, Yoda sees that, you know, he can look within himself and make a better decision.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So it's all about trusting who you are, who you were born to be, and what you've learned, and that shapes the choices that you make, which again ties into you sense or you feel. And Yoda seems happy because Ezra says at the end that he feels alive, and Yoda says he's happy that he used the word feel. Why is it more important to feel versus sensing?
Going from your heart, and you know, that's what the Jedi do, is, you know, they go with their heart and they go with what's hopefully with what's right.
True. But if you go with your heart, then why is attachment such a problem? Because if you're encouraged to use your heart, attachment's all about using your heart. So it's kind of a paradox, isn't it?
Well, maybe we've talked about this before. Maybe Yoda's, you know, changed his ways since the Clone Wars and since the, you know, the Jedi Order. You know, you wonder all that time in Dagobah that he's been rethinking the Jedi way, and obviously passes this on to Luke. And, you know, some of these things do pop up in my mind in Empire and in Return of the Jedi. And you said, you know, is it something hard or something, you said sense or feel. And this scene popped in my mind where Luke in Jedi throws his lightsaber away and says, I'll never follow you. Or, you know, it's almost like he's using his heart in that time period. So it's almost like you can correlate that to this experience too. It's almost like this is the new Yoda. This is the new
way. Human.
Yeah, this is the new way we're doing things. And attachments, you know, we haven't seen too much of that. But yeah, we've seen that in Kanan and in his relationship with Hera. So,
but then it gets more complicated because in Empire, Yoda seems to be very much don't be attached to your friends and their memories. You know, if you honor what they fight for, it's okay to sacrifice them.
But does he say that? I've always wondered if he says that to keep him there. Because his whole thing...
Which would be duplicitous, which would not be the Jedi way. Mm-hmm. So I would think no. Here's the trick, I think. I think that what Yoda is doing is offering ways of being in touch with your humanity, not being afraid, not letting your fear conquer you, because we all know what that does to Anakin Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically saying, look, there are a lot of ways to embrace the universe. Be open to your heart and who you are as a person. Don't be pigeonholed into specific ways of thinking. Obviously, you want to make good choices, but go with who you are at the core.
Well said.
Right on.
And really, and this is the kind of things where if you think about it too much,
my mind hurts. Yes.
Yeah. It become convoluted. So,
well, where my mind is lingering is on Corey, what you had said, I want to think about it more. So I'm glad you said it. It's a new Yoda, and I like what you said about maybe he's rethought the Jedi way, because so many times I've thought about, and Dan, you and I have had conversations like this about you know, what was the Jedi way, and did Anakin, did Darth Vader or Anakin's fall happen because of an imbalance in the Force, because the Jedi were just too strong, they're just too powerful? Did they pull in too much sense rather than feeling, perhaps?
Ooh, that's cool. Yeah, it's so fascinating. My favorite episodes, I think a lot of people may be in the similar place, but is when they go into the intricacies of the Force and what makes you who you are. And we see that perhaps as strongly as anything in this episode when he says, why do you want to be a Jedi? And he says, you know, he gets mad, he wants power for revenge, and then Yoda says, oh, is that really the Jedi way? And then Ezra truly comes into the light, and he says, I just want to protect myself, my friends, everyone. And Yoda is happy, and Ezra says that he feels alive. I feel alive. He's found his place. He's found who he is, who he wants to be. He wants to be a Jedi, not because he wants to rule, but because he wants to protect. You know, I can only protect you. I can't fight a war for you. He's come back to Qui-Gon's way of thinking.
Wow.
Without even knowing who Qui-Gon is.
Yeah.
Mind blown. Good job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, while you were talking about that, I was thinking about, so Anakin, I'm thinking about that time Anakin was sitting with Padme and talking about power. And now he wants the rule to protect everyone, and eventually he wants to protect Padme so much. Mm-hmm. And so, but where maybe the difference is that he was concerned about one or a small group or his protection was so focused around power, whereas Ezra's focus is so much about protecting people, but doing it through the, you know, in what his idea of a Jedi is.
Yes. You're not the bully. You really are someone there to defend those who maybe can't defend themselves in the way that they may need.
Yeah.
It's like parenting. It seems to all come back to parenting. I think more in Rebels than maybe anything. Do you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I do want to point out real quickly before we wrap up. I heard on Full of Sith they talked about how maybe Dagobah and the cave, maybe that was Luke's test. That was Luke's journey. Mm-hmm. And you guys talked about that as well. I'm going to say no on that. Mm. For one thing, and we saw this with the younglings in season 5 of the Clone Wars, which is still one of my favorites. I know, Tom, you and I talked about that, and Corey as well. I think here in the cave, he already has a lightsaber when he goes in. He loses the test, obviously. So maybe, I mean, it is obviously a test. Is the tree on Dagobah one of the Jedi temples? I don't know. I don't know about that, and maybe we'll find out sooner rather than later. But to me, the test for Luke, it wasn't Dagobah. It was a test, maybe a lowercase t. But his test, his Jedi test, is on the second Death Star. And like you said, Corey, he throws that lightsaber away. Mm-hmm. I'm a Jedi like my father. You can strike me down if you want to. And the Emperor is no illusion. There's no question about that. That's when he fully becomes a Jedi.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say even Yoda says that when he meets him in Jedi, when he talks to him, because Luke says, "So I am a Jedi," and Yoda, "Whoa, not so fast," you know, and says, "One more test you have." So you're right. The capital T test is in the Emperor's room, or throne room.
I think so.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dan, you know,
and also he already has a crystal, but you know, he confronts Vader and Empire. And after that, he has to build a new lightsaber because he loses mm-hmm. his father's lightsaber. And I hope that the comics or a future novel will cover how he ends up getting the Kyber crystal for that, because that'll be what we find out.
That'd be cool.
I want to take something you said about the full Sith guys talking about the tree being a temple or maybe in that context. But
they definitely speculated, which was cool. Yeah, it was
very
awesome.
Cool.
Make sure you listen to the full Sith will they talk about this episode, because they have some awesome things to say. They always do.
They do. You know, in relation to, you know, the tree or the temple, you know, it's a structure. It's a nature thing. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's somebody has to enter to learn themselves or something? I mean, would you say that maybe in those spots, in those places, not necessarily the brick and the mortar and the tree and the bark, but is that, you know, places that the force is a little bit more stronger, and not necessarily because it's a Jedi temple, but is it built around that area because the force is strong there, and they can go through this trial and find themselves. Not necessarily it's a building or a structure.
A good question, Tom. What do you think?
I've always just assumed, I guess, that the force is stronger in nature. So not surprised that a Jedi temple is in the rock on Lothal, or could potentially be, you know, the tree on Dagobah. I'm trying to think of other examples of, you know, I like to think that, you know, perhaps even the moon of Endor had, you know, had some sort of special force power because of its nature. But I just started talking and I completely forgot.
It's been one of those shows, yes.
Yeah, but yeah, I think, you know, I think the force is definitely stronger in natural places. Surprising, though, that then the Jedi Temple through the Clone Wars would be on Coruscant.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that too. I mean, is that just a structure to show presence? Not necessarily
most likely,
a place of force, but I don't know. It's good something to think about.
That is very cool. So at the end, there's just so much fun in this. Ezra says he feels alive. We talked about that. And they leave, and Ezra gets his Kyber crystal, and of course he doesn't even know what it is. Like, what's that? So, wait, dude, you're going to have a lightsaber now. Yes. Every kid's dream, right? They hear mm-hmm. that.
Yes.
And something, the last line, no, it's not the last line, it's the last line when they leave their test, and And I can't remember who says it, but they say, I know what's in there now. Oh, I think Kanan says that.
Kanan says it.
Yeah, he says, I know what's in there now. The past. So it's another powerful metaphor. Leave the past behind you. Leave your fear and anxiety behind. Move forward and be transformed. Be different. And Ezra certainly is different. He builds his lightsaber. And guys, wow. I mean, when it's built, Kanan even says, it's different. But that seems right about you. Let's have some reflections on the lightsaber. I certainly have plenty to say about it.
I think it's great. I mean, I think the noise alone is really cool. I'm always excited about what it's going to sound like when it ignites. We all kind of seen previous versions of it as a toy or something. Friend of ours dressed up as Ezra for Halloween and had a version of it. I've had to pick it up and play with it. But yeah, this is definitely something different we haven't seen. It's kind of a full knuckled design. And rightly so, I think, for Ezra. I mean, it's going to be cool to see how he uses it or when he uses it or, you know, anything too. Is like you said, Dan, it's the ultimate experience of being a Jedi or being just a fan of the series or something. You always, that ignition, that lightsaber, or just holding it in your hands and just that power of that, of the being swung around and the noise and everybody jumps around and has done that, you know, swinging their broom handle or something like that and making the noises. And so it's definitely a huge moment for Ezra. And I know we talked to Taylor Gray and we talked about that a little bit in our interview with him, and he didn't divulge any secrets, which I'm glad he didn't, to keep this kind of, premiere for us. But it's such a moment in this series, I don't think we're ever going to forget.
Yeah, I love this lightsaber, and something that I think is so unique about it. And when I'm not going to lie, I'm sitting here looking at the Rebels visual guide right now.
Yeah,
and to get a little bit more about it. But sure.
I found mine, by the way.
Oh yeah, you lost
it. Complaining about that on 1,000 shows. I found it. It was underneath my yearbooks of all things. Anyway. Sorry, go ahead.
But as I look at it, I'm like, this thing is as cool and clunky as the Falcon. I mean, it's just so like hodgepodge put together. But what I think is so cool about it that makes it so unique to Ezra, and I mean, each one is unique to each, you know, creator. But what I liked was before he came down to reveal, you know, each one of them said, well, Chopper gave him a power cell and Hera gave him this, or, and Sabine, this is all of them. This isn't his thing. This is all of them together. And that's what's been so strong. That's what he's counted on for so long. And you think about like in the temple, you know, Kanan dies and then, or doesn't die, but you know, in his illusion does. And then the whole crew is killed by the Inquisitor, and he learns to face his fears by himself, but then he comes back and he brings them all back in. And you know, the material result of that is this crazy, awesome lightsaber that he builds.
Yeah, that was exactly the thing that I was going to talk about, and I'm glad that you brought that up, Tom. Yeah, there's a little bit of all of them in the lightsaber. Hera goes through and explains who adds what, who provides what. It very much makes it a community event, a community experience, and I thought that was great. The sound when he ignites that lightsaber is unlike any lightsaber I've ever heard before.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an accident. Of course it's not an accident, but I think there are implications there that Ezra's different. It makes me, I mean, you can't help but speculate about what in the heck is going to happen to this crew of the Ghost, since we know there's a lot more story after Rebels, a lot more story. But it just gives me hope for what's going to happen to him. He's different. I mean, he connects. I'm going to go back and say it's Kanan and Ezra together that are able to change the Force, not necessarily change the Force, but change what's going on in the universe so Yoda can see them. And I think Kanan is a huge, huge cause of that, because he's sort of the pilot light for Ezra in many ways. But it's Ezra's choice in what he does through his test, and Kanan letting him make his test that changes things. And now we've got a lightsaber with different sounds that can actually be used as a blaster, which, as he says, it's different, but that seems about right for you. It's just, it's pretty cool, man. It just shows again that Ezra, there's something special about him, which I've sort of known ever since I read Ezra's that book by writer Windham about Ezra, which was pretty cool. So here we are.
Yeah, well, and I think you know, even though we make all these comparisons between Ezra and Luke, you know, we're just comparing to another path, and Ezra is no Luke, and Ezra is no, you know, Ahsoka. I mean, he is so unique, and you're right. I'm really excited to see what his adventures are like, because at the same time, Kanan is no Qui-Gon or Obi-Wan. Or, you know, any of those. He's so different from all the others as well. And so we have a storyline that we can compare to, but it's going to be so wildly different because times are different now.
Right. Well said. Well, guys, this has been, as much as I've enjoyed this episode, I think I've enjoyed our discussion as much, if not more, because it's brought a lot of great things to light, pun intended, about this. So any last thoughts or reflections on this before we give our overall grade?
I'll just toss out that and this kind of goes back to the lightsaber, but when he ignited that, my daughter, I had no idea this was even in her realm of thinking when it comes to the Star Wars universe. Her first thing she says is, "It's blue." She goes, "It's the same color as Kanan's," and I was like, "Why do you think that is?" And so we had a great conversation about it. But she has been so perceptive on so many different levels that I wasn't even there. I was so excited to see it and just see it ignite and have them all looking at it. But she was so into what color was that blade going to be.
Isn't that cool?
That is. And so I guess my wrap on this is just how awesome this series has been. And not just for me, but for any new Star Wars fans coming into the fold who maybe have seen some others, but this is their first introduction to brand new stories. That it has just been so phenomenal.
Well said. Corey, what about you? Any last minute thoughts?
Yeah. You know, you hit it on the head there, Tom. This series just, you know, going into it, I was kind of like I was excited about it, but I was kind of ho-hum because I wasn't know where it was going to go. It was set in a time we don't know about and these brand new characters, and it was, you know, designed differently. But this series, I'm enjoying this so much, if not as much as the films themselves, only because the quality of acting, storytelling, everything in between. I'm just excited to see where it's going to go. And this is an epic episode. Mm-hmm. We've just spent over an hour at least, and I'm sure we'd go even further in depth of just discussing the ins and outs of things. And you know, we even get to some of the idea of the other group blank
ghosts.
Yeah. Well, I mean the crew. I'm going to say the crew themselves. Sure. I mean, we didn't get to talk about them. They weren't too much involved in it, but they were in a certain way. But I mean, it's got so much richness to it, to the Star Wars saga and the Star Wars way. It has all those feelings just as built into the new canon. And I'm so glad it's going in such a great direction.
Yeah. The only last minute thing I want to say is that Anakin Skywalker's problem is that he has visions of his friends dying, and it makes him angry. And that anger eventually leads to him committing atrocities, acts of genocide in many ways. Ezra faces similar visions, although the love is certainly a very, very different kind of love, and it's a much younger, newer love than Anakin's for his wife, as opposed to love for family, both very incredibly important in different ways. But Ezra faces his fear, and he voices his horrible feelings he has of wanting revenge, and then he lets them go. He lets them go, and in many ways, we've said this before, but Kanan and Ezra are so much more evolved than Anakin and Obi-Wan, and you wish that they were able to somehow interconnect with one another more readily, because it would have changed a lot of things. Hmm. It certainly would have impacted how much discussion we were able to have, so I guess I'm glad that didn't happen. But I think I'm probably going to guess that we're going to have an overall uniform grade here, but guys, let's try this. This will be fun. My wife and I actually do this for major decisions just to see how we're going to react. So when I count to three, let's all give our grade at the same time. Okay?
All right.
Are you ready? One, two, three.
A plus.
Yeah, A plus.
Hold on. Yeah, really happy with this one.
Yeah, not an A+, huh?
Oh, I thought we were just giving. I didn't know we were giving
pluses,
the highest
pluses
of marks
or minuses. Yeah, well, sure. No, I give this one an A+ for sure. It's a great one to come off of the break over. Yeah. You know, this November and December. It was really good.
I agree. It had everything you want. Frank Oz returns. We learn a lot about the Force. It's character driven. Beautiful animation. The music adds an excellent canvas to what's going on. It's everything you could want in Star Wars. So, Tom, thank you again so much for being a guest here on Rebels Reactions. And, of course, we couldn't have you on without asking you your 5 questions. Are you ready, sir?
I am ready.
All right, very good. So, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Favorite Star Wars movie, hands down, is Empire Strikes Back.
Good choice. Who is your favorite Star Wars character?
Favorite Star Wars character? Gosh, that's such a tough one. You know, there's so many great characters out there. But I'm just going to have to shoot from the hip like my favorite character does and go with Han Solo.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said.
He just, he's so dynamic and, you know, he's such a scoundrel at the beginning and becomes a general by the Return of the Jedi, but still has that scoundrel feel. And you're always wondering, you know, where's this relationship with Leia going and everything. And so just so many memories of him when I was a kid. So I'll go with Han Solo.
I agree. And if you've seen some of the variant covers for Star Wars number 2, there's one that looks like the old Hasbro action figure of Han Solo. But it's pretty cool looking. So, what is your awesome favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
I think I have to go. I thought, I've listened to your podcast, and so I knew you were asking these questions. And so I tried to prepare for this one because this is such a tough one. And in fact, I'm not going to cheat and say I've got 2. I'm going to go with 1, but one of them almost came out of the episode we talked about tonight. But my favorite, I have to say, is in Return of the Jedi. Luke, standing in the Emperor's throne room, looks at the Emperor and says, your overconfidence is your weakness. And then the Emperor snaps back saying, your confidence in your friends is yours. And I just love that. I love that because, you know, it's Luke puffing his chest out saying, you know, standing up to the Emperor, and he just snaps back like, you little fool, you little nothing, you know, and it's such a great moment. And then to know that, you know, just minutes later, the Emperor is done.
That's right.
You know, I got to make a comment. I recently did a Bantha Banner with our friend Jeff McGee, and that quote was one of the questions he asked me. And you have to listen to the show to get my answer and see what I say.
Oh, I can't. I never did ask you how you did on the trivia.
You'll have to wait and see. It's all mysterious.
Oh, oh, you've intrigued me. I will have to go and listen.
So the next question we ask, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Yeah, I don't necessarily actively collect, but I sure have a plenty of...
You have an amazing collection.
Well, all from my childhood. So thanks to my mom for holding on to all that great stuff. But I have to say, the one piece that I thought was long gone until the Star Wars Reads Day came along this year. And I was digging through some of my old stuff, and I came across probably my most prized possession is an oversized Marvel comic book of Star Wars, the entire Star Wars story in comic book from, you know, 1977 or 78. I don't know what the publication date on it exactly is, but I thought it was long gone. And it's not, you know, of course, it's not in the greatest condition because I loved it and I read it over and over, but it is so, so cool and so excited now that Marvel's got it back.
Yeah, Corey, he also dug out like some old vintage, I guess, 8x10 maybe cards from the Star Wars fan club of when Empire came out, and I was... Oh, man. I know you're not supposed to covet, but, man, I really like this thing.
Yeah, I know. You were kind of drooling over them. I thought maybe I should laminate them or something.
That's right, before, you know, fingerprints. So, what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Well, there's so many, but I think the one that I have to go with is this constant theme either father, son, or parent, child, or mentor, that just rolls through every single story. I mean, and naturally, the Jedi Order is put together that way, but as is the Sith, where you have, you know, you have a master or an elder leading someone else, and just all of the complications and the relationship issues and the Padawan thinking that they know what's best and all of that kind of stuff. Just, you know, being a parent now, that really has kind of risen to the top when I think of Star Wars. That it's just something I think about a lot, and you guys talk about this a lot, I know, and it's so much fun to go back and watch all these shows and all these episodes and movies with my own children. And see their reactions and kind of remember my own as I'm watching them, and it makes me think about my parenting as well. You know, not that I want to be a Darth Vader, but you know, I sometimes, you know, Yoda keeps saying patience, and I just keep going back to that sometimes and thinking, you know, sometimes as a parent you just have to have patience and let them make the mistakes when they go into the cave or whatever.
Which is a perfect way to end our discussion of Path of the Jedi. So that's awesome. Yeah. Well, Tom, thanks again so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi. Where can listeners reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Oh, wow. Let's see. Let's go with
Twitter.
I'll give you, on Twitter. My Twitter is, now I'm drawing a blank on what my Twitter is. Cycling Librarian. That's what I am.
There you go. And we will, of course,
Librarian on Twitter.
Yeah. Boy, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes for sure.
Awesome.
Well, Tom, thanks again so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. See you guys.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.